Black History Podcast. As always, I'm your host, Nashad Carrington. Now, some of you may know, between 2012 and 2015, I actually lived in Boston, Massachusetts. Now, all of the years of being in school, I always knew and learned a little bit about the history of Boston, but prior to moving there, I had actually never even visited the city. So once I moved to the city, I actually lived in Dorchester, but one of my favorite things to do was actually to hop on my bicycle and just ride the city, exploring all the areas like South Boston and Chelsea and Cambridge, and sometimes even all the way out to Waltham. But one of my favorite rides, with the exception of all of the pedestrian traffic, was actually to just ride through Boston Commons. Now, today we're discussing Crispus Attucks, a person whose life was cut down in that exact area of Boston. And there, in fact, is a marker in the street to memorialize his death. Now, I'll let you know up front, today will be a bit of a shorter episode than we generally have had, but not for a lack of effort, but instead because the record out of about 15 to 20 years of Attucks' life is just generally not available. So Crispus Attucks was actually born in 1923, but the exact date of his birth is unknown. What is known, however, is that his father was from Africa and his mother was a Native American, either a Wampanoag or Natick Indian. Now, both of them, his parents, were enslaved persons in the United States. In 1743, the theologian Roger Williams published a journal about his experiences with Native American tribes, most notably the Narragansetts near Rhode Island. But one thing that Roger Williams included in his writings was translations from English to the Native American languages that he learned, and vice versa. Most pressing to the person we're discussing today, as relates to Roger Williams's writings, is the word or the surname Autuck, which meant deer, like the animal. Think Bambi. And Williams notes that a Native American named John Autuck was named in a warrant during King Philip's War of 1676, and this person was subsequently captured and executed in Framingham, Massachusetts. There's an additional place that the surname Petter Autuck can be found, and that is actually in historian William Barry's accounts of the history of Framingham. Suffice to say that the Native Americans in the Framingham area and in the area of Massachusetts use Autucks, or a variation of it, as a last name or surname. So one other thing. During slavery, it was actually common for the enslaved person's master to name the slave, and oftentimes they did so by naming the slave after Roman nobility or gods, with the first name Crispus having reference to Flavius Julius Caesar from 4th century Rome. Now, it's believed that a Colonel Joseph Buckminster was Crispus Attucks' first master, and he then sold Attucks to another man named William Brown sometime around 1747. Now, according to legend, Crispus Attucks was highly intelligent and so well informed as a judge of cattle that he was permitted, to buy and sell William Brown's cattle upon his own judgment of their individual value. Now, without surefire records to support the same, the information about Brown's ownership of Attucks comes from a 1750 notice in the Boston Gazette that was actually pronouncing Attucks' enslavement to the servitude of William Brown, a plantation owner in Framingham, Massachusetts. This same notice is actually what provides us with the information to the date that Crispus Attucks escaped from enslavement, that date being September 30th, 1750, when he was 27 years old. Now, the notice wasn't the only one to detail Attucks' status as a runaway. In fact, the Boston Gazette ran three different notices about his runaway status. And these are, in fact, the last official documentation known to exist prior to his death. The first notice was published by the Gazette on Tuesday, October 2nd, 1750, 2 days after his escape. This notice actually offered a reward of £10 for the return of a runaway slave named Crispus. The second and third notices were published on November 13th and November 20th. The first notice to be read as follows. Ran away from his master, William Brown, of Framingham on the 30th of September last, a mulatto fellow, about 27 years of age, named Crispus, 6 feet 2 inches high, short curls hair, his knees nearer together than common, had on a light-colored bearskin coat, plain brown fustian jacket, or brown all-wool one, new buckskin breeches, blue yarn stockings, and a checkered woolen shirt. Whoever shall take up said runaway and convey him to above said master shall have 10 pounds old tenor reward and all the necessary charges paid, and all masters of vessels and others are hereby cautioned against concealing or carrying off said servant on penalty of the law. Boston, October 2nd, 1750. The two additional notices ran by the Gazette read exactly the same as the one of October 2nd. Because the name Crispus or Crispas was so rare, and because the description provided was such an unusually tall man matches later testimony, historians believe that the runaway described in the Boston Gazette had to be Crispus Attucks. As you could hear, the notice in the Gazette specifically provided a caution to owners of ships or vessels, as they're specifically called out, in Boston. This was because strong young men, even formerly enslaved Africans or mulattoes, could very easily find work on board a ship, and William Brown was afraid that Attucks would hop aboard a ship if he made it to Boston, considering that Boston's only about 30 minutes to 45 minutes away of a drive from Framingham. But at the time, obviously, there was no cars, and so he was on foot. According to Google Maps, it's about a 6.5 to 7 hour walk. So it really wasn't that far, considering that if he was escaping from slavery, he very likely would have went to Boston. Now, being on the sea afforded a high level of anonymity, especially to formerly enslaved persons. Throughout the colonial era, as well in the 19th and 20th centuries, northern port cities served as a magnet to former enslaved persons, runaway slaves, and free Africans as well. In these cities, they were often able to find work as laborers or even seamen. So I hope that you've at least heard the name Crispus Attucks before, but if not, I'm glad you're listening to this episode now. Now, I'm sure the serious history buffs out there know who he is, or at least what he is best known for. But let's dive into it, and God willing, this episode will shine a bit of light into areas of his person, life, and legacy that otherwise you didn't know. So if you haven't figured it out just yet, I'll drop another couple of hints, i.e. American history, Boston, colonial time, taxes. Well, if that still didn't give it away, allow me to dive into a quick snippet of American colonial history, and it'll set the stage just a bit. During the late 1760s, ports in the New England area were very heavy politicized, with numerous protests, skirmishes, and riots breaking out as residents fought back and expressed their growing dissatisfaction with British Parliament's ideas and implementations as related to taxes. Predominantly fueled by the Stamp Act of 1765, approximately 500 seamen, white and black, men and boys, rioted in Newport, Rhode Island, and similar mobs appeared in 1767 in Norfolk, Virginia, the same in 1768 in Boston, Massachusetts, and again in 1770 in New York. In all of these instances, sailors, laborers, and seamen were usually leading the revolt, with the common theme being the fact that white and black were fighting side by side against British soldiers. Now, on March 5th, 1770, the biggest and most well-known revolt of them all took place in Boston. Also going by the name the Incident on King Street, the Boston Massacre took place where British Army soldiers shot and killed people on King Street. Today, King Street is known as State Street in Boston while they were under attack. So, we talked about the tax, but before we really get to what happened, I have to give you a little bit more hit of history here, so please bear with me. In 1768, the British Parliament passed the Townshend Acts, which took a number of common everyday items that were produced in Britain and exported to the colonies, and made them subject to various import tariffs, meaning the colonists had to spend even more money to get everyday common goods. Colonists responded and objected to the Townshend Acts in saying that they were a violation of natural rights, charter rights, and even the constitutional rights of British subjects in the colonies. Now, supporting their constituents, the Massachusetts House of Representatives drafted a petition to then King George III requesting that the Townshend Acts be repealed. In 1768, the newly appointed colonial secretary sent a letter to the colonial governors in America instructing them to dissolve the colonial assemblies if they responded to the petition circulated by the Massachusetts House of Representatives. In addition, the governor of Massachusetts was directed to tell the House of Representatives to rescind the letter, but they refused. Tensions mounted like crazy in the area after this, with British soldiers being brought into the city and small skirmishes taking place. Now, on February 22, 1770, an 11-year-old German boy named Christopher Cedar was killed by a customs employee. His death was glorified to the point of virtual martyrdom by the Boston Gazette, and the following propaganda was such that it served to further inflame tensions between colonists and British soldiers. On the evening of March 5th, a British soldier was on guard outside of the customs house on King Street. A Boston wig maker accused a British officer of not paying his tab, but the private on duty told him he should have more respect for the officer. This caused a bit of a tiff between the two of them, and eventually, the British soldier left his post and hit the wig maker in the head with his musket. Hearing the wig maker's cry of pain, a large crowd came to the scene, and eventually, this crowd swelled, with the British soldier effectively being alone with nothing more than his musket in hand. As the evening progressed, the crowd grew larger and larger, and over 50 Bostonians, including Crispus Attucks, who was at the scene, started throwing rocks and stones at the soldier and actively challenging this man to fire his weapon. Eventually, a non-commissioned officer of the British Army and six other soldiers with fixed bayonets came to assist the soldier. By this time, it's estimated that 300 to 400 Bostonians had gathered. The crowd continued to antagonize the soldiers, including spitting at them and throwing snowballs and balls of ice at them. And soon after, something was thrown at the officers, knocking one of them to the ground. And when he got back up, he yelled, "Damn you, fire!" and discharged his weapon into the crowd. 11 men of the Bostonian crowd were shot, with three of them dying instantly, those being Samuel Gray, James Caldwell, and our very own Crispus Attucks. Attucks was shot with two bullets in the chest and was the first person to die. Following his death, Attucks' body was carried to Faneuil Hall, where it laid in state until March 8th, when he and other victims were buried together in the same grave in Boston's Granary Burying Ground. So, what was Crispus Attucks' role in the Boston Massacre? Clearly, he had to be close to the front line, but what was his exact role? Well, after the Boston Massacre, there were a number of trials surrounding the King Street murders, but there are numerous inconsistencies in those trial records. Before joining the confrontation, Crispus Attucks, who was referred to by witnesses as the, quote, mulatto, was said to have been seen with a large core wood stick, and supposedly he was leading a crowd of 20 to 30 sailors. With one witness actually testifying, quote, "I saw a tall mulatto fellow, the same that was killed. He had two clubs in his hand and said, 'Here, take one of them.' So I did so," end quote. Now, the attorney representing the British soldiers, who would go on to be a U.S. president, on trial for murder, stated that Crispus Attucks was resolved to be the hero of the night. And at the trial, at the end of it, 14 jurors determined that Crispus Attucks was, quote, "willfully and feloniously murdered at King Street in Boston, caused by the discharge of a musket or muskets," end quote. So here's where the story gets a little weird, but also very, very telling. Now, in the jury paperwork, and testimony refers to the mulatto killed in the streets as Michael Johnson. So who was Michael Johnson? Was Michael Johnson or Crispus Attucks the one who was killed? Now, I'm pretty sure the audience is pretty astute enough to figure this mystery out, but if not, historians believe, and it does make sense, that Crispus Attucks had actually changed his name and used Michael Johnson as an alias to protect himself in Boston since he was escaped from slavery 30 minutes away. Now, on March 12, 1770, the Boston Gazette ran an extensive story covering the shooting and the funeral for the men who were killed. This story was eventually reprinted in the London Gazette a few weeks later. Now, the London Gazette identified one man as, quote, a mulatto man named Crispus Attucks, who was born in Framingham, but later belonged to New Providence in the Bahamas and was in Boston in order to go to North Carolina, killed instantly with two balls entering his breasts, one of them special goring the right lobe of the lungs and a great part of the liver most horribly, end quote. Now, though Crispus lived the last 15 to 20 years of his life as Michael Johnson to fully escape slavery and the search for his former self, in death, he was returned to his given name of his life. So we'll close this episode with a few words that the Boston Evening Post newspaper bestowed upon the following men, which was later actually inscribed on the stone marking their grave. Quote, "In freedom's cause the wise contend, dear to your country shall your fame extend, while to the world the lettered stone shall tell where Caldwell, Attucks, Gray, and Maverick fell." So it's interesting, like I suggested, there's actually a marker that marks the spot for where the Boston Massacre began in Boston Commons. It's just outside of Faneuil Hall, which is actually where, as I suggested earlier, Crispus Attucks' body was laid in state for a few days until he was buried. The exact spot, it's very easy to walk over. It's very easy to, as I used to do, ride my bike over without paying much attention unless you know it's there. It's about 10 steps away from the balcony of Faneuil Hall. If you stand on the balcony, you can see it perfectly. If you're walking on the street, it's a little easy to miss. But it's interesting because that exact same spot is apparently where Crispus Attucks was shot by the British soldiers. And on top of that, he's actually buried steps away from there as well. Granary Cemetery is just across the street on the backside of Faneuil Hall. There's actually a pretty decent sized marker that's there if you go in there, if you have the opportunity to see where he's buried at. He and numerous other individuals actually from American history are buried in that same cemetery. So we're gonna add a slight little new segment to the show and probably try to keep this going for the futures. It's called The Quickest Recap Ever. Since this is the first time we've ever done it, let me know what you think in the messages, comments, emails, etc. Most importantly, let me know whether you think this recap properly captures the entire story in a simple form that's easy to remember. Basically, some walking points for you. If you care to tell someone a recap of today's episode, this is what I think you can tell them as a summary. Crispus Attucks was the first casualty of the American Revolution when he was shot and killed at the Boston Massacre, also known as the Incident on King Street. Some reports say that Attucks was a leader and instigator of the event, and over the centuries, debate rages as to whether he was a hero and a patriot or a rabble-rouser. Either way, Attucks is immortalized in African-American history, and American history, actually, as the first to defy and the first to die. Crispus Attucks will always be remembered as a true martyr, the first to pour out his blood as a libation on the altar of a people's rights. So that's the end for today's episode. If you have any questions, feel free to reach out to us. You can find us at thisiscarrington.com/podcast. Shoot us an email as well at info@thisiscarrington.com. Please let me know what you thought of today's episode. Like I said, I know it was super short, 15 to 20 years of his life missing. He died at 47. Escaped slavery at 27. A lot's missing, I know. But let us know what you think. If you have any show ideas, let us know that as well. And as we say here all the time, only steel sharpens steel. Take care. See you next time.